Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, I want to welcome back Carlos Toro to the show. We're going to talk about some boxing as per usual. You know, when you see Carlos or when you hear Carlos, we're going to talk some boxing. But we're going to do something a little different. And I don't know how many times I've actually talked wrestling with Carlos. Maybe not ever. I don't remember because we've had Carlos on for years and years now. But we're also going to talk a little bit WWE Backlash France, which was a very interesting show. That crowd was nuts.
Oh, my God, it was.
So we got two things we're going to talk about. Carlos, what's up?
Hey, it's been quite a while since the last time I've been here. And by the way, I think the only other time that I've talked wrestling with you live on the air was not on the Double G show. Wasn't even on. I don't think it was even on YouTube. It was back when Twitter Spaces were a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, I think we were talking about the Royal Rumble, and you were asking us, basically the Fight Game media staff, who they thought was going to win the Rumble and, like, as the big surprise. And I remember, I think the surprise pick that I thought was going to be in the Rumble that year was Roxanne Perez, and turns out she did not. But I was like a year early on that.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, Twitter Spaces. You know, people still utilize them for good engagement. It's just hard. Like, we are all about sort of podcast network, so grabbing that audio and trying to turn it into like a listenable podcast isn't the easiest thing in the world. So I think it's fun, and I think some people do have some good engagement on those things, just not something that we continue to do. But, you know, we do like YouTube, and we're here on YouTube. We do like our podcast feed. So if you're listening on the Fight Game Media feed, thank you for listening. And Carlos, Canelo and Jaime Munguia was the main event tonight. And I remember when they announced that Munguia was going to be the guy for Canelo, my initial thought was, okay, doesn't hit hard enough, sort of untested, though he's been in some big battles, just none at the level of a Canelo Alvarez. And I mean, eventually what we saw tonight was pretty right on. I imagine you sort of had the same thought when they announced the fight. But I do have to give it to Munguia in that the kid did not take a step back. And even after he felt the power, even after he knew he was getting outboxed later in the rounds as he got more tired, he hung in there. And I was really impressed with him. And I think in a losing performance, he kind of takes a step forward as a name. I'm not sure how big of a name, but, you know, so much so was he overshadowed that Oscar De La Hoya decided to make this press conference, this whole build about him.
Oh, God.
But Munguia did an excellent job tonight in the role of the guy who was just going to lose to Canelo. Some of these fights that we watch in which the guy who is going to lose to Canelo knows that he's losing and is just sort of like deflated. But Munguia kept coming, and I really applaud him for that. What did you think about his performance?
Yeah, I mean, look, Munguia was game. He was, I mean, the fight kind of went almost exactly how I predicted it was going to be. The only difference was that I thought that we would get to the point where everything just kind of changed. I thought that would take us like a round or two later, but I don't think any of us expected with the way Munguia started, just hammering away with the jab, and he landed a lot of clean shots that Canelo normally doesn't take. And he was doing a great job. And then all of a sudden, just Canelo just taking advantage of the fact that Munguia's biggest weakness his entire career has always been his lack of defense. And he exploited that. And I think that was, I think everyone kind of saw how this was going to go just based on that. The only thing that question mark was that, you know, we are getting to a point where we could, we might be starting to think about Canelo Alvarez in terms of his age. I mean, he's not, he's not young. Munguia is 27. He's in his physical prime. It's not, it wasn't going to be a likely scenario where you could really see Munguia winning, but we're at a stage where you can kind of talk yourself into thinking Munguia has a chance. And going back to kind of what you were talking about just a second ago about Munguia taking a step forward, it almost kind of seems to me that this was basically Canelo versus Floyd a decade ago, where Canelo, where Floyd was the was the A side, and he dominated the fight. And even though Canelo, he lost that fight, he ended up taking a lot out of that fight, not just from being in the ring against a technical savant like Mayweather, but also in essentially how to handle himself as the A side. And and we kind of, you kind of got a glimpse of that in the post fight interview with Jim Gray about having that kind of A-side mentality in terms of what he wants to do and how he wants to dictate things. But going back to Munguia, I mean, he has done an excellent job over the last year since he changed trainers to Freddie Roach. I thought that his career was really stagnant for a couple of years when he started fighting on DAZN, and he had the great Aaron Morales as his trainer. He was just, kind of going nowhere. But then all of a sudden, he found, you know, he found the golden touch in Freddie Roach, who basically told Munguia, listen, you are an explosive, dynamic, offensive fighter. Let's use that to our advantage. And really, we kind of saw that in the first three rounds. And even after Munguia got knocked down, he just kept going, which, I mean, that was going to be his only way. He was not never going to outbox Canelo.
No. So
his only way of victory was going to be a knockout.
Munguia, Mungaya. I knew I was gonna have an issue with the pronunciation, but so did the announcing crew. I think Ranello, Mauro Ranello was Munguia, and then I think it was Goosen was Mungia. So they were going back and forth on it. So I apologize for my mispronunciation.
No worries. I've also heard Munguia as well. I don't know if it was from the broadcast, but I definitely have heard that. There's like I have heard like five different ways to pronounce Jaime Munguia's last name, and like almost all of them were incorrect.
So what you said about whether or not Canelo is on the other side of the hill, I think is going to be the story coming out of this. Because generally, you know, he fights a couple of times a year, one in May and one in the fall. And he's kind of running out of name fighters to fight, which benefited him in the sense that he could just go up and down and you know, jump up to a different weight class to make that fight. He's at 160. I think he weighed in at 166 yesterday. So it's not like he's a heavy 168. It just seems like as he ages, and you know, he's going to have his second fight at the age of 33, I believe, you know, that type of bouncing up and down and chasing the right fight, it doesn't seem like that interests him. And if you take away what his post fight interview, he was basically like, I call the shots. Like that's what you get to do when you're the best fighter in the world at this point. And so my thought was, okay, like it's going to be more about kind of how Mayweather did it at the end, which is, okay, who's the next guy? And then it's all on my terms, because the benefit that you get is essentially fighting me, and that's how you're going to make your name. And I don't know how many fights he's going to be out there actively chasing the anymore.
Yeah, it seems like every time we do one of these shows, And the question you always pose to me, what's out there for Canelo? The list now just seems to keep getting shorter and shorter.
Oh, that is on the list of questions again. Don't you worry.
Well, I can tell you, this is a spoiler warning. The list is increasingly short at this point. Back in the day, even a couple of years ago, I think I could have thrown up like 6-7 names. It's not nowhere near close to that at this point. And no, you're right. Look, Canelo holds all the titles at 168. And he is slowly cleaning out the division to the point that there's only a couple of names that Canelo has not tested himself against that would be really interesting challenges. You can always think that maybe he could test the waters of 175, but he's already done that before. He already fought Kovalev and won a title. He honestly has no incentive of going up to 175, just looking at his mentality and how he's approaching at this stage of his career from the business side of things. He can just, he's the A side. He holds all the titles. He gets to dictate everything. So the only thing that I can think of, right now is, his legacy is already signed. I mean, he can retire right now. He's in the Hall of Fame, first ballot. And he's been undisputed champion for a couple of years at this point. And he's won titles in 4 weight classes. At this point, legacy fights, I don't think really matter to him anymore, because he's already had the resume that is better than 99.9% of any professional boxer, past, present, or future. So it's really just about getting the biggest possible payday. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with this whole little cat and mouse deal with David Benavidez, is the fact that Canelo recognizes it's the biggest fight at 168, or one of the biggest fights in boxing. But now, if Canelo just sort of acquiesced to the fact that Benavidez is looking for him, that's the biggest fight possible, without trying to see if he can get more bang for his buck as far as how much money he can get out of it, Canelo is just going to keep trying to see how much money he can squeeze out of it. PBC is desperate, and I'm sure Amazon would love to keep Canelo on the platform to be able to generate as much revenue as possible, because these cards are not cheap. And the fact that we're already into May, we have our next Amazon show, and it's another pay-per-view. When Amazon and PBC told us there's going to be a bunch of non-pay-per-view fights, we haven't even seen one. it does kind of give you concern that, Canelo is going to try to, that Amazon will just do whatever it takes to get Canelo onto the platform. Imagine to say Amazon, just more specifically PBC, that they desperately need the biggest names out there to be able to sell these pay-per-views.
Now, when you said 175, he had the Bivol fight already. That was, not his cup of tea necessarily. And I thought, well, if Beterbiev beat Bivol, then maybe he could look at that. I don't know how politically that would happen. But then I saw that Beterbiev was hurt. So that fight is being postponed and Bivol's taking a replacement fight.
Yeah. It just came out this week, and that the fight was going to be off. That and the report was he's going to be fighting. I'm trying to remember. This is why I put all these notes on Discord, so that I can very easily look back. But now the problem is I wrote so many notes that it's
Malik Zinad. Is that who it is?
Yeah. Yes. Malik Zinad, 22-0, 16 KOs. Really unknown contender at this point, and it's kind of like a last second deal. I mean, the fight's in a month. I mean, a lot of the big contenders are not going to step into an incredibly difficult fight, even though the money is going to be great, because Saudi Arabia is overpaying everyone.
Yeah,
they're gonna want all the time they can get in order to be able to fight a guy as difficult to beat as Bivol. Canelo couldn't even beat Canelo, barely could touch Bivol. And so that June, there's a June 1 card. I mean, it's still going to happen with that weird, totally not Survivor Series inspired idea for an undercard moving forward, with now Deontay Wilder versus Zhilei Zhang as the main event. By the way, I think that's going to be are really the first four rounds of that fight are going to be amazing, and then the last eight rounds are just going to be a slog.
Okay, so coming out of this, do you see Munguia really getting sort of pushed into something bigger for him, or do you think he's going to take some time away? Because he's a young dude, 27. Mm-hmm. I was telling you in the Discord that this dude looks just as young as he looked when I first saw him. But I imagine, you know, he's got the, you know, Oscar's got, you know, the way Oscar does things, and we can talk about the Ryan Garcia thing in a second, but Oscar's got to believe that, you know, I'm sure he'll tell himself, oh, you know, if he didn't get knocked down, you know, we're right in this fight. You see the 115-112 card. He would have been right in the fight, at least on that card. But what do you think is going to be the next step for him?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because if Munguia insists on staying at 168, then unfortunately he's going to be suffering the same fate as a lot of Canelo's recent opponents have faced, in terms of losing to Canelo and then just kind of being in limbo. I mean, Caleb Plant really hasn't done much since he lost to Canelo. He's had a couple of fights since then. He lost to David Benavidez. He beat Anthony Durrell. I think he beat Anthony. I know there's two Durrells, Andre and Anthony. I think he beat Anthony Durrell after the Canelo loss. But he really
about to say Andre Durrell is still around from the Super Six tournament.
No, I think Anthony's the younger one, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
But and Caleb is now kind of just in limbo right now, and it's kind of more or less the same. The only other thing I can think of that would still be a really, really attractive fight, but I don't know if Eddie Hearn will actually go for it, is have Jaime fight Edgar Berlanga. That was a fight that was briefly discussed late last year. It's a very easy fight to make as far as like public attraction. Munguia's, I think, is a bigger name coming out of this fight, even with the loss. And you can always go to boxing's all reliable. It's Mexico versus Puerto Rico. That's going to sell tickets just on that premise alone. But Edgar Berlanga is now kind of angling towards now a fight with Canelo. And I don't know if Edgar's team is willing to take that kind of risk. Even knowing that Munguia can get knocked down, I mean, just the offensive firepower that Munguia still brings, only 27, like he's, you know, if we're really thinking about it, like just on a pure athlete's terms, he's just entering his physical prime. He's still got a couple of years to really enjoy the youth and his size and his physical prowess before he starts to kind of fall off a little bit. So,
yeah.
I mean, that would be a really good fight to make. I think it would be just as good as the fight that we just had tonight. But aside from that, I mean, Munguia has the size to go to 175. It is possible. But then you're also going through the exact same problem, is that the belts are all tied up with two people that are on a collision course. We're going to be on a collision course to unify the title. So you'd be right at the back of the line once again. So it is tough. I think the one good thing about Golden Boy and what they're working with Zanfer, who is Munguia's actual promoters, is the fact that they're always going to find opponents for their fighters. May not necessarily be big names, or may not necessarily be, you know, fights that you would want to flock out and see, but they'll keep them busy. It's just not going to be against names that you would immediately think of coming out of an event like this.
Right. Before we go to the Ryan Garcia thing that I want to ask you about, anything you can take away from Canelo dropping him and just not finishing him, and I guess the last four fights have gone the distance, is it an unwillingness to risk? I didn't sense that, because Canelo did not seem to be afraid of Munguia's power in any way. Like he just deflected everything, even shots that did, you know, slip through. He was not fazed at all. Or is it, you know, is he just not able to reach back like he once was?
I think it's a combination of one, his age. I mean, he is, it's so funny that, you know, we've seen Canelo throughout his entire pro career. And we still think about as the little young ginger who is there starting to collect belts at 154 and 160 and fighting all these different names like Cotto and Mayweather and such. But, you know, I think his age is starting to play a little bit of a factor. His style has never really lent to it being a knockout artist that will just immediately knock someone out on a moment's notice. He is a guy that will break down people systematically. And there are times, and I've noticed with Canelo, is that if he doesn't sense a need to knock you out, meaning that, you know, his opponent will not actually bring much of a threat once he starts dismantling them, he really doesn't feel a need or pressure to actually have to like knock him out. Because I think he recognizes that once he's starting to get into the mentality of, okay, I gotta knock him out, then you're just inviting the possibility of some wacky thing happening, and then you're on the other side of the canvas with your face lying down instead of the other way around. So,
right.
So and listen, he's got a fantastic team with Eddie Reynoso as his trainer. I think that, you know, it's his style is now less so knocking people out and more so breaking them down, whether it's targeting a certain body part, like, you know, hurting Callum Smith's arm or targeting Billy Joe Saunders's eye, or even just flat out outboxing them and, you know, taking certain shots away from his opponents and then just landing anything that exploits their weakness. Like, for example, like, you know, Munguia really left himself wide open up the middle at a lot of different points in the fight. Even after he got dropped by the uppercut, Munguia still left his the center of his face wide open. He still kept getting hit with uppercuts. And then once he started to adjust to that, he left his left the side of his body's open, and just Canelo started pounding away with the body hooks. So, you know, he's not going to go. If he gets the knockout, he'll be happy with it. But I don't think that's his primary focus nowadays as compared to it was back then.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Ryan Garcia, I was interested in the fight when the fight was made with Devin Haney. But as I watched Ryan Garcia trying to hype this, I was just completely turned off. And I was turned off in a way of like, I don't want to see this young man's downfall. Like, we know he's got, you know, these issues with he's had issues with depression before. He's a social media star, and that brings on its own set of emotional instability at times. And I'm watching this guy and I'm just like, man, this guy, you know, he's just going to break down. And it's just going to be a sad story. So I completely tuned out and I'm just like, I'm just not going to watch this. This has the opportunity to just be really, really bad. And he goes in there and he's overweight and he's drinking and he's doing just silly stuff. And he goes out and wins the fight, which I don't know what that says about Devin Haney at this point, but it was almost like, You had one job to do here, buddy. Like you said to take care of this kid. But it just goes to show you that, you know, the talent is still there. Like the toolbox for Ryan Garcia is still amazing. And yet I watch him and he tests positive for Osterine. So he fails the steroid test. I'm not exactly sure if there's anything that's happened since then about that, but does this make you want to see him fight more? Does it make you want to see him fight less? Does the circus element add to his appeal? What is your take on this whole thing?
I have many, many takes about this. First of all, I do agree with you on being really turned off by the buildup of this fight in the sense that, you know, you look at this young kid who has a lot of very young fans. And you know, he's interacting with these people online with so many different individuals who are very famous in social media, but are just horrible, horrible human beings. I'm not going to name names, but all you got to do is just look at some of the stuff that he does online with these people. And I'm talking about Ryan. And then all of a sudden, you know, the talent was always there, but it's just the mental stuff and the fact that he's associating himself with a lot of folks. It really is concerning. And as far as the drug test, the failed drug test, I mean, whether or not he's guilty as far as intentionally taking stuff. Fact of the matter is, he tested positive. I don't think that is something that really is up for debate. I mean, it's not just, well, we have the reports of the positive test results. We have the letter from BATA saying he failed a drug test. Now, all that's left is whether or not the B sample also tests positive. And you know this for as much as I do, like 99% of the case, the B sample is going to give up.
Ever been a situation where the B sample was not the exact same as the A sample?
I'm trying to think. I want to say there may have been an instance, and I don't think it was in boxing, but I think there may have been an instance where
in the UFC maybe.
I don't remember where, like, the B sample, like, I think what happened was may have been like the B sample was not handled properly, so it was thrown out. I don't know. Was that how Ryan?
Ryan Braun. Yeah, what was to say?
Was that now how Ryan Braun's whole deal?
The drug tester had to take his sample home, I think, because
FedEx closed by that point.
Right.
And I don't remember if that was the A sample. I think that was the A sample, but I don't remember. But yeah, but I feel like there may have been like an instance where the B sample yielded something differently, or it something happened where it invalidated the A result, but that's neither here nor there. He also did test positive, by the way. I'm trying to remember. He tested positive for a component. I'm trying to like look it up for another failed drug test.
In the same drug test,
I believe so.
Interesting.
It was another. I know he tested for Osterine, and could add, and if it pops up, I will definitely try to you look at but you look, going back to Ryan, I mean, the talent is there, and the issue here is that he's going to still parade the fact that he dropped Devin Haney and the fact that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, let's be honest, it's not like the vast majority of Ryan's fans or not the vast majority, but a good number of Ryan's fans are going to care or even know about what happened. All they could go back to is what they saw, and they saw that first round where Ryan landed that left hook and Devin Haney was on his rear end.
And him going on social media and just saying, oh, I have never taken a steroid in my life and X, Y, and Z. So if you're that crazed of a fan of his, which I'm sure he has many of them, mm-hmm. that's the type of fan who's like, oh, yeah, I believe Ryan. Of course, he's my hero. the whole thing. But, you know, I was telling some other people, I was like, if I'm Tank, I'm like, let's do it tomorrow. Like Ryan's drawing power gains from that Haney fight. Now, how many people does he turn off like myself? I don't know, but there's never going to be a better opportunity for Tank to fight him again and beat him probably fairly easily again than now, I believe.
Now, the question here is what's going to happen as far as Ryan getting a suspension. That's going to be the big question. How long of a suspension are we talking about? Because almost for sure he's going to get suspended. Whether or not it's like a 6 month or a 9 month or a 12 month deal, I'm not 100% familiar with how New York State Athletic Commission handles it. But I believe, but if the fight had taken place in Vegas, I could have almost certainly told you it was going to be either a 6 month or a 12 month because. Mm-hmm. There, Nevada's rules is, if I remember correctly, it's a first penalty is 12 months, but if you cooperate or don't make the investigation difficult, they can potentially reduce it all the way to 6 months, which is actually what happened with Canelo when he tested positive for his drug test that
tainted meat drug.
the good old fashioned clenbuterol. Just stopping us from seeing the Golovkin rematch just for 6 months.
Is that why Oscar was wearing the real meat shirt? Was that the reference to the Canelo's drug test failure? Because I saw Oscar had a shirt that said real meat on it.
You know, I didn't even think about it, but you might be right. That could very well be.
What a troller!
It absolutely is. And Oscar knows the whole deal about Mexican athletes and tainted meat because that's a fairly common excuse Mexican athletes give when they fail drug tests specifically for clenbuterol. Oh, it was the meat. I just had a really bad taco down in Tijuana.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, before we get to Backlash, what is on the schedule for fights upcoming? You would put something in our Discord about some fights you were pretty excited about.
Yeah, so one thing I actually did want to mention for anyone that actually watched the show on Amazon Prime was wondering about the next upcoming shows. There is a pay-per-view June 15 with Tank Davis and Frank Martin and then co-main event David Benavidez versus Alexander Vastek. But I actually found out like 30 minutes, like actually, no, we've been going on for 30 minutes. I found out like 45 minutes ago that there is actually a club show from the Pro Box series where the main event is going to be Sergey Lipinets versus Robbie Davis. And if you don't have, if you don't have the zone or if you don't have ESPN Plus and you still want to watch boxing and you have an Amazon Prime account, it's actually not a bad fight as far as like club shows going on. In about, let's see, it is 1:42 a.m. Here on the East Coast, May 5th. In a little over 26 hours, we'll have the four fight card for the Naoya Inoue versus Luis Neri fight from Tokyo. That's going to be on ESPN Plus, which is going to be a really, really interesting fight as far as the storyline. Because the main storyline is Neri, the last time he fought in Japan, he basically retired this beloved Japanese world champion, Shinsuke Yamanaka, in a rematch. Because in the first fight, Neri tested positive for a bunch of drugs, and the WBC, instead of stripping him of the title, they actually said Neri gets to keep the title if he fights Yamanaka in a rematch. And then in the rematch, Luis Neri not only comes in over the bantamweight limit, He comes in over the super bantamweight limit and then just knocks out Yamanaka in like 2-3 rounds. And then the Japanese Boxing Commission said, Nettie, for lack of, paraphrasing, Nettie's forever banned from fighting in Japan. But they made a special exception for this fight. And I think it's partially because of Catharsis, because they think that Inyo is going to knock Nettie out. And I think that's what's going to happen. But it's going to be an interesting fight. Vasily Lomachenko is fighting on May 11th in Australia on ESPN. Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk on May 18th. And I'm hesitant to even speak about the fight because we're less than 2 weeks away. And I still feel like any day we're going to get an announcement that the fight gets postponed again. We already saw it happen with Beterbiev and Bivold. And it just feels like we're just waiting for that other shoe to drop. I posted a graphic on the Discord about the upcoming fights, which is a couple of days ago, which is now outdated because it included Beterbiev versus people. Trying to see. But those are some of the upcoming fights that that are coming up, or at least the big main fights in the coming up. I think there was I'm trying to think if there was a. Another one coming in August. Just off the top of my head, I think there was like something big in August, but I don't think it's Jake Paul Tyson fight
in July.
Yeah, in July.
It'll be the most viewed boxing match in a very long time, maybe ever, just because of the reach of Netflix.
Not just that. I mean, I think that the announcement of the fight being actually sanctioned as an actual pro fight, I think that's going to draw even more eyeballs to it. Because one of the things that I hear from people who are on the fence about it was, this will be an interesting freak show. But if it's got an exhibition, then what are we doing here? But now it's not going to be an exhibition. And even the people who, the boxing fans who are going to be like, well, this is a freak show, I don't want to support this. You have Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano as your co-main event. And that's and that's going to be like one of the best fights of the year. By the way, the fight that I was the August fight I was telling you about, August 3, Saudi Arabia is going to be relocating to Los Angeles on that day because they are, they're now promoting fights in the U.S.
Wow.
I don't know as far as like in terms of actual real life governmental politics, how, you know, the logistics or even the legality of Saudi Arabia doing this type of stuff in California. But the card is, I hate to say it, the card is deep. This is one of the deepest boxing cards in years. You got Terrence Crawford moving up in weight to fight Israel Madrimov for the WBA world title at 154. Tim Tsui against Virgil Ortiz. David Morrell, the other guy that if not Benavidez, I think David Morrell should be the guy to fight Canelo Alvarez next against Radivoje Kalajdzic. And then you got Andrew Ruiz, the guy who beat Anthony Joshua going up against Jerrell Miller, who somehow is actually back fighting the United States after failing many drug tests for enough drugs to that'll make a Balco laboratory blush. So that's a really, really deep card. So I think that's about the farthest I can see as far as boxes. So the short answer, there's a lot of really good boxing in the coming months this summer.
I don't want to make your head explode here, but at what point does Canelo just go, okay, fine, make the Jake Paul fight?
Oh, man. You know, I try not to think about it. That's the thing. I try not to think about it too much. I also don't think that... I think to a certain extent, Canelo does have respect for himself in the sense that, okay, the money would be that monumental, but I'm also not going to degrade myself as a boxer, lowering myself. If I genuinely think that someone is truly beneath my level and will never even come close to my level, then I'm never even going to entertain the fight, which is essentially, what's happening with, for the last few years in terms of Demetrius Andrade, who is, you know, was a lot of people thought like, that would be a wild card to potentially fight Canelo Alvarez. And then every time the topic of Demetrius Andre is mentioned anywhere near Canelo, Canelo would just go on an absolute tirade, just talking about how much Andrade sucks. And the only good that came out of all of that is that Canelo finally felt comfortable to speak in English. And it was just to say F Demetrius Andrade.
Yeah, he doesn't mind dropping some bad words in English here and there.
Oh, I think that's one of his favorite things about learning English is how much he can swear, and the fact that he's a big time athlete, a big time celebrity, the fact that he can get away with it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to WWE Backlash. Now, last year we had one of the best PLE shows. And that show was in Puerto Rico, and Bad Bunny faced Damian Priest. And at that, you know, I've been a Priest fan for a long time, but at that point I was like, man, this guy needs a run. Like the way that he handled that entire Bad Bunny thing was awesome. And so fast forward a year later, and we have this PLE in France. And the two things about these shows, the last year's Backlash and this year's Backlash, is they're international shows. And the crowd is just on fire the entire night. The last year's Backlash, I think on a short list of my favorite shows of the year. And a lot of it was just because of how awesome the crowd was. And, you know, I don't know if I like this year's Backlash as much. I don't think there was that Damian Priest Bad Bunny match on this show necessarily. If you were into the Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles program, you got an excellent, excellent wrestling match. I didn't like that, any of that stuff at all. I mean, the build, AJ losing at WrestleMania, like I had my own issues with it. However, that crowd made this show. And I think on a normal show where maybe the crowd wasn't as rabid, there could have possibly been some issues with this show. There was the Bianca and Jade Cargill match against the Kabuki Warriors that kind of fell apart in the middle, and they did a good enough job as we got to the end to kind of save the thing, and you know, so I don't think it was a complete disaster, though it looked like it was possibly heading that way. But there was like interference. You had Tangaloa showing up and joining the Bloodline. And I don't know if he botched his save or his pulling the referee out to save the match, but I saw some, I guess there's a different angle of the video where maybe the ref kind of helped him pull himself out of the ring. I haven't seen a good, I didn't actually click on the video because I was at the fight, at the movie theater watching the fight, and I didn't want the audio to play, but somebody had sent that. So there was lots of interference. There was lots of, you know, just the Judgment Day stuff. So if not for that hot crowd, I'm not sure that this show would be as well received, but you had that hot crowd. WWE is hot right now. What were your thoughts? I know you had some people tell you like, dude, you got to kind of check this thing out. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I originally wasn't going to plan on watching the show live because I mean today would just load, and I didn't want to overwhelm myself, and then I just had friends who were watching the show, and they tell me like, dude, this crowd is unbelievable, and I'm just like, okay, I'll watch it at the very least, and I'm not gonna lie, the crowd got me hooked. They were unbelievable, the same as last year's Backlash crowd in Puerto Rico. The one thing is that the difference between last year's crowd and this year's crowd was it felt like the French crowd was really putting themselves like more over instead of sort of reacting to to what was going on. It didn't happen a lot, but it did happen enough times to where I kind of noticed. And I don't want to say it affected the show negatively in the sense of, you know, it was a distraction or anything. But I don't know about you, but it kind of felt like if you noticed the commentary that Michael Cole and Corey Graves were, you know, there was a lot more dead air during the show than normal from what I've noticed. And it just kind of let the crowd speak for itself. But overall, I thought it was a really good show. I thought definitely some matches were elevated significantly because of the crowd, which it's a good thing because, I mean, you know, stuff like the, you know, I wasn't super into, you know, the Damian Priest, Jey Uso match. I thought it was a fine match. Didn't think it was like a barn burner or anything. Or, in, you know, you mentioned the Jay, you know, Jade not having the greatest match performance of all time. But I think the crowd still was more than enough to sort of make up for it. And I think overall, I think part of the issue with me with this show is that it's a 5-match show. And I get that it meant that all of the matches were going to be given plenty of time. But, you know, the problem is that, like, with only 5 matches and some of them not even guaranteed to be great, you really are kind of leaving yourself up to potentially not have as good of a show as you would want to. And there were some, me personally, I really don't know why you couldn't have put the Sami Zayn, Bronson Reed, Chad Gable Intercontinental match on this show. I felt like it was perfect to like just give them like a great, great match that the crowd was going to eat up and just kind of keep the momentum going. Because there were times for me where, you know, the Bianca Belair Jade Cargill match, and not that I'd want to keep harping on it, but there were a couple of moments that it just kind of took me out of it. Just because I was worried about that spot didn't look great. Yeah. Or I mean, I remember where Jade Cargill was just kind of trying to pick up Kairi Sane, and then she just couldn't get a firm hold of her. So she was trying to go gorilla press her, and then she almost like she was about to like slip and just drop Kairi on her head. I mean, she saved the spot. She, you know, Kairi took a nice bump, but there were a couple of moments where I thought, you know, Cody and AJ really saved their show because that main event was fantastic. I thought the street fight was really, really good. I thought it was a great opener for the show, and I really liked the Tangaloa debut.
So back to the Jade Cargill thing, I think it's going to be overall, it's going to be good for her because she's never been like AEW had some really good crowds when she was on, but nothing like that. I mean, who's really been in front of a crowd like that? Not too many. But in that moment, they're going to be pushed really hard. They were working with some really good wrestlers, and she had a couple of deer in headlights moments. Like there was a couple of moments where I think she was supposed to be selling, or you talk about dead air. There was dead spots in that match where it was almost like they didn't exactly know what the next thing was. And so she was kind of sitting there with like this look on her face of concern of like, oh no, what are we doing? But it's going to be good for her because she just doesn't have that experience and she's building those reps. You know, Bianca Belair, I hearken back to some of her NXT days when she was a heel. And some of those promos that she cut as a heel, I was like, oh, like she's trying really, really hard and it's not working. But now she's one of the best wrestlers, male or female, in wrestling. So Jay just doesn't have those reps yet, and she's building those reps. So hopefully they continue to work on the house shows. She gets more the instinct stuff that doesn't come naturally when you're so prepared at all of the moves that you're going to do. I'm such a fan of hers, though. I'm a giant fan of hers. I think she's got so much upside, and it's really about, you know, how long she wants to do this, because she and her significant other, Brandon Phillips, Dat Dude BP, when he was playing baseball there. I'm sure they're, you know, monetarily they're doing fine. So, but I just really like her and I want to see her succeed. Going back to that opener.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but there was actually one other thing that I wanted to kind of mention about Jade and this current run that I think will actually be good for her is the fact that when you compare to her run in AEW, it was almost entirely just singles matches. So, and mm-hmm. she didn't wrestle on a frequent basis, on a regular basis. She was wrestling at most once a week.
Do you remember what her first, very first tag team match in AEW was?
Was it the Shaq match with Red Velvet?
That was the first match.
I'm trying to. I was legit thinking like, okay, like she's had a, like her run in AEW was like full of singles match. I know there was like a tag team, but it's like, and then back in my mind, the only tag team match I can think of was the Shaq match. And I don't remember if she had any other tag team match. But my overall point is the fact that now she's going to be getting more reps doing the house show circuit, and also you're also protecting Jade in the sense that you're now giving her reps, but doing so in a tag team environment where you can protect greener wrestlers mm-hmm. and avoid making them look as raw and inexperienced as they actually are. And Bianca, you know, it's a natural fit to be the more experienced partner for her as someone who was in Jade's shoes and probably is the best wrestler who can guide Jade into getting into that next level. You mentioned, like, you know, she was pretty rough around the edges. Like, you could see the potential in her even in NXT. It just took time and refining. And yeah. I think it's this very similar situation having Bianca be her mentor, for lack of a better word. I think that's going to help. And, you know, she's not going to look as lost as you might think. In a tag team match, I mean, she looked a little lost a couple of times, but I think if you just left her to do nothing but singles matches, she's gonna look a lot more lost, at least in the short term.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Back to the opener, I joked with John LaRocca and Dave Meltzer that there was no crazy hardcore, no rules matches, and we all sort of agreed that the tag team match will probably be pretty crazy. And they just out and out, you know, just Nick Aldis was like, well, you guys are just going to have a no holds barred match here. And so worked to their advantage. The crowd loved it. They were going crazy. Lots of fun spots. Tama Tonga, Solo, you know, I don't know how much juice this bloodline has. I imagine what's eventually going to happen is we're going to see kind of like a bloodline civil war. Mm-hmm. You know, between the sides, based on how long it took for us to get to the third inning with the original bloodline, that might be a little while here.
Oh God. I really hope it doesn't get to like NWO and NWO Wolfpack levels of like stretched out. Cause oh my God, if it gets to that point, listen, I love WCW, but man, when it got to that point, when you have to introduce the Wolfpack, ooh, it got bad.
Yeah. So, but it was a great opportunity for what they did. You know, I hate to pull the ref out spot, but it happens. I get it. I just hate it. I think it's so stupid. And then, you know, we had the Tangaloa join Tama Tonga and Solo. And I really love Paul Heyman's, like, the attention is not on Paul Heyman, but if you're paying attention to Paul Heyman, which is what I usually do, because he's really telling the story, he was not expecting Tangaloa in the match. And so this was a surprise to him. And what I am wondering is if we're supposed to think either A, Roman called that shot, or B, Solo called that shot and did not tell Paul Heyman because he doesn't respect Paul Heyman. So I like that little part of the story, and I'm sure we'll see more. I'm guessing that Jimmy Uso is going to turn babyface at some point here soon and join his brother or get kicked out of the bloodline, and then Jay has to save him, something like that.
that they're going to do. But I'm intrigued. It's not the same as, you know, kind of Roman controlling everything, but he'll be back at some point, and then it'll be kind of must see TV again for fans, I think.
Get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started in your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save big money at Menards.
And the fact that we still, I don't think we're done with knowing who all the players are, because I do think Jacob Fatu is going to eventually play a role in this. I know there were some people kind of speculating, like, oh, what if they bring in Hikuleo? And I'm like, I don't know about that. But I can see where you were going with Jimmy coming back. And I honestly fully expect Jimmy to reunite with Jay. Well, once he's back, since supposedly he's hurt, and that's why he wasn't a part of the draft pool and everything. But I think that, you know, I can see some sort of war, civil war, however you want to handle it, between the Usos, and I don't know if, you know, Roman turns face and joins up with the Usos.
At some point, right? That's going to happen at some point.
Right. And then what about The Rock? Where does he fall in all this? So you can, there's a lot of players that I think we still don't fully know as far as their allegiances and everything. And I was paying attention to Paul Heyman, and looking at Paul's face that entire time was telling me he had no idea that Tangaloa was in there, and he had no idea about any of what was going on, and that it was Solo that was going to be calling to take their shots, which I do think that this has breathed new life into it. I just don't know if this is something, even with all the variables that we still don't know, I don't know if this is something you want to stretch out for like 2 years or anything.
It can't. I don't think it can.
Like, at most, okay, I think you maybe stretch a year. Uh-huh.
Except, If Rock and Cody are the next WrestleMania, you still got to do Rock and Roman. So maybe you do stretch it out like a year and a half.
I guess, but I think at that point, it now just becomes Rock Roman and less so about the bloodline itself. I'm thinking about like the grander picture as far as the bloodline storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rock Roman is going to be the culmination. But I think it's just going to be limited to those two and not going to be something where it necessarily has to also resolve whatever is going on with Solo and with the Usos and with Guerrillas of Destiny. I'm curious if they're actually going to reference them as Guerrillas of Destiny, because they really laid it on like almost a little too thick with the New Japan references during the show. And I tried listening back, but I swear I think Michael Cole said mentioned about Tangaloa having great matches with the likes of Evil, and I'm just like, oh, you did not see any of those matches. I dare anyone to tell me a good Evil match from the last 2 years.
No, I don't want. I don't. You know, Chris Samsa, who has been a guest on my show before, has been a guest on Speaking of Strong Style. Obviously, if you follow New Japan, you know who Chris Samsa is. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he'd feed Kevin Kelly information. I'm sure he feeds, you know, Chris Charlton and maybe even Walker, the announcer's information. They need, I mean, if they're going to try and tell these, they need a Chris Samsa on the WWE side, who's like someone who knows what they're talking about when it comes to New Japan, so they can, you know, if Michael Cole, Michael Cole isn't even excellent at WWE storyline, so you know, having him even have to worry about New Japan stuff, yeah. So
my whole thing was like, out of all the guys in New Japan from Bullet Club that you had, did you have to name drop? First of all, Finn. Finn Balor made the club. You could have just name dropped him easily and it would have had even more impact. And I'm just like, out of all the people Why evil? Why him?
It's the name that he could remember. It's not a hard word to remember, I guess.
What? He couldn't remember Dick Togo?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. He did, but then he would have had to mention like a 1998 WWF reference, though, if he did. So the triple threat match with Bayley and Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. To me, it was like a vehicle to make Tiffany Stratton look fantastic. Bayley wins. I think she cradled Naomi and you know, they shook hands and hugged and everything at the end. But the story of the match seemed to be really Tiffany Stratton. And, you know, this is another thing for her, because, again, you know, she's much better at the spots and such and the timing than Jade. But also, she doesn't have a lot of reps, and she's had a lot of these matches where I'm guessing it's really about sort of memorizing it and practicing it. And this is a little bit of a different level here in the main roster. But man, she is adapting like a fish to water, and the personality standpoint as well. Fantastic how she carries herself, the sort of the ring presence. She's going to botch some stuff. She's going to.
Oh, yeah. And you could tell there were some spots in that match that were like very telegraphed. Like it was like everybody was like taking spots like really slow. Like you could tell like, oh, this was rehearsed and they really made it a point to try to do this spot. Tiffany's, you know, Tiffany is someone WWE is really trying to strap the rocket ship on as far as being a big star, you know, with this new generation of women coming onto the main roster. You know, Jade and Tiffany are just two examples of names that are going to be, that I think WWE are going to push as, you know, the ones that are going to be carrying the women's division in the inevitable time that will, you know, we're not going to have Becky and Bayley and Charlotte as often as we normally see them. And, you know, Blair Davenport as well, another wrestler who I think is going to be a big part of the main roster's future. Maybe not necessarily like the next couple of months, even though she got drafted to SmackDown. But I think she is going to be someone, along with Tiffany and Jade, who are just going to be like huge stars. And I think they've done a good job, because I think what they're doing is something, it's similar to what they did with Bianca and basically highlighting what makes her so great. And I think that it's working so far. I mean, with Jay, she, even though she's still green, she still is being treated like this massive star, and the crowd is eating it up. Same with Tiffany. I think Tiffany, there's a lot of really good positive qualities that you look for in a star. And I think she, more than anything, as you mentioned, she is carrying that that excellently, to the point where you do see her as a future superstar in the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the third match on the show was, we talked a little bit about Sarretti Priest and Uso, lots of interference. This was really more about Jay taking advantage of the crowd, just biting on everything that he possibly wanted to do. But, you know, I have my reservations about him as a top performer, as a main event. There's still, I think there's still some nuance there for him to figure out, but he's got so much charisma that the camera loves him. I love the rhyming cadence of his promos. It's just different, and you know, there's upside. I don't think he's necessarily there yet, but I think he's done such a fantastic job for himself. And you know, Priest is great. He's been the man. You know, I've just been waiting for him to finally move up, and he has, and hopefully, you know, he'll move on and we'll see some bigger matches here. I'm sure there's going to be a Drew McIntyre match coming in the very near future, that will be a pretty big deal. But yeah, this was okay. Nothing fantastic, but told the story that they were trying to tell.
Yeah. And this, and one thing that I thought was interesting was how much commentary put over the fact that Jay is trying to win his first singles title. And everything I kept thinking about is like, well, We know Jay was never gonna win. He just wasn't. First of all, you're not gonna cut Damian Priest's title reign short just like that. It just doesn't make any sense. So my whole thing with Jay is that I think he's slowly getting there. I can honestly see Jay, you know, having a program, say with Jake Paul. I'm sorry, Logan Paul, and then he and do something for the U.S. title at SummerSlam in Cleveland. And I can genuinely see Jay maybe potentially finally getting that, because I think now with Jay, we could very well see the story of him finally trying to win that first singles title. And he's already failed at the World Heavyweight title. I don't see him challenging Cody. The IC title is already kind of busy with Sammy and with Bronson and with
Chad Gable.
So to me, I just kind of feel like, you know, if you want to tell the story, then I think that putting him up against one of the least likable people in wrestling in Logan Paul, and you do it at SummerSlam, where the crowd is going to just eat up the Jay's gimmick to basically give him that title.
I like that.
So I can see that happening. By the way, the whole deal after the match with the Judgment Day and Damian Priest, that was a very interesting wrinkle to the whole Judgment Day story. The sort of the implosion because of Rhea Ripley's injury, that now Finn and Jada McDonagh was beating up Jey Uso, and Damian Priest was really, really pissed at the two of them. He just didn't want them to even be a part of the match, and didn't want him to keep beating him on Jey Uso. Like, I kind of thought to myself, like, this is slowly starting a Damian Priest face turn.
I think
it could very well work.
Absolutely. It's like what I say goes, but you guys don't ever listen to me. And now you're trying to make this as a team win. And, you know, I almost lost because of you goofballs. That's kind of how I took it. But when Rhea is back, there will be more wrinkles to it. The problem is there can't really be a Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest conflict necessarily, at least a physical conflict. So I'm looking forward to how they tell that story.
Unless the split that I can think of is Damian, Rhea, and Dominic, once he's back, they kind of split off from Finn and JD, and those two get someone to basically go up against Rhea. And
that would be bad news for Finn and JD, though, to be split off of Rhea or Damian Priest, because they'll just be floundering.
I feel like with Finn, I think he's got enough cachet to where I think you can at least hope that Finn just won't be a fish out of water. I'd be genuinely concerned because, oh boy, I don't still quite see it. I mean, for the longest time, JD's whole thing was he was the odd man out in Judgment Day. He was the ugly duckling in that whole group. He just didn't really quite fit the vibe there.
Yeah, totally. We already mentioned the Jade and Bianca. I wonder if they're going to get a team name of some sort, because just you put them on a poster, you put them on a marquee, and people are going to turn their head and go, who are those women? Because women are impressive. So I would like to see them really get some real run. And I would love to see WWE, you know, PR get in action. There's very few specimens like both of these women in sports. And, you know, I kind of go back to Caitlin Clark with the WNBA. Like, women's athletics, women's sports has always been underappreciated. And
we're running hard with it right now. There's opportunity up the wazoo for both companies to really promote women's wrestling even better than they do today. So I hope that they take advantage of it. And there's no two better, I think, than having Jade and Bianca as a big act in WWE right now.
Yeah, I mean, Jade has to look unlike anybody, male or female, in the company right now. And that works. And I say that not just in WWE, but also in AEW. Because even in AEW, I would say the exact same thing, because she has such a unique look to her that you just, and she has, even though she, we keep saying that, you know, she's an experience in the ring, but in terms of her natural charisma, she has a sheer abundance of it.
Absolutely.
That like you almost have to purposefully fail at trying to make her a star for her to not be a star. Because I think like she is about as close a thing to a future megastar WWE has in their roster.
Okay, let's talk about this main event. Cody and AJ, excellent wrestling match. That's what it was designed to be. I enjoy really good wrestling matches. What I want to see is I want to be into the conflict. I want to be into the hype. I enjoy the buildup. I enjoy the dressing on the side to a really, really great match. And unfortunately for me, I never bought AJ was winning. I don't think anybody did. So what you're there for is you're like, okay, we're just going to see a great wrestling match. But if I can't buy the twists and turns, and if I can't buy the opponent, I'm always going to kind of fall back on, I'm having a hard time getting into this like I would in a Danielson and an Ospreay match, right? Because there wasn't the conflict there, but it was a real sort of athletic contest where anybody could have won at any time. The way that you're pushing Cody's first feud, nobody really believes he's going to lose unless he was facing Roman. Then there might be some doubt. So they're a little bit handicapped in that way. I have nothing against AJ. AJ's great. To me, this was a booking problem, but I think what they had in their back pocket was they knew that this France crowd was going to be great. They're going to see a great wrestling match. Everything's going to be fine. This was a post WrestleMania PLE, and we're all happy. Just for me, I really dislike it when we see programs like this, because it almost seems like a taking advantage of the audience a little bit.
It's the classic, we have a new champion, so a new face of the company, and we can't just simply take the title off of him, so we have to do some sort of buffer feud just to be able to just keep prolonging it. And yeah, no, and I think this is one of the problems, one of the issues sometimes when you have a face world champion, in the sense of they already conquered the mountain.
Yes.
Now what? That's the problem. And like, it's, you know, with Danielson, when he won the title at WrestleMania 30, I mean, it was just like, for a short of that title reign was because of injury, but his first feud was Kane. I mean, it's like no one was going to believe he was going to lose the title to Kane. And when then you have, you know, then you had Kofi's title reign, when he beat Danielson a few years later, the feud was just simply, okay. Really, the title ring was simply, okay, how long can Kofi actually just hold the title? And right. It really was just, he just had a bunch of really good matches, but it was just like the constant putting Kofi down as champion.
Right.
That it really didn't just, that we didn't really buy into a lot of the programs, because we were not being convinced of being a legitimate champion. I mean, this is a different thing with Cody, but it's in the sense of, all right, he's the champion now what, which kind of infuriates me, because if the plan all along, even from when he lost to Roman, that he was going to come back, that he was going to end up winning the title this year, you're telling me you had a whole year and you don't have anything like super engaging for Cody. Again, I love AJ Styles, but no one actually thought he was going to beat. I think maybe they thought that, like, ooh, what if we throw in some Bullet Club references? Even though,
Though
it was like, was Cody really in Bullet Club? He was with the Elites, I guess, but like, no one really thinks of Cody as like ex Bullet Club member.
Right. You know what? You actually made a great point. I'm not exactly sure if this was the point that you were making, but by saying that they have a babyface champion who fans believe in, it's probably going to be a problem to get the heel over in a way where you actually think Cody is going to lose. So that is a good problem to have, because it is the opposite of what the two examples that you gave. You could throw Rey Mysterio in there as well for when he won the title, in that if you don't have a strong baby face and you put that guy over as champion, then the programs are kind of less interesting. But with Cody being a dominant babyface champion, maybe that is the better way to do it. And just, I'm just sort of cynical, you know, wrestling fan who kind of looks at things a little bit differently than the majority of the WWE fan base. So this is, you know, now that I think about it, that's a really great argument for this thing being okay and me just sort of overthinking it. But
I think part of the deal with in Cody's case is that a lot of us are just kind of like, okay, when is Rock coming back? We just want to see Cody versus Rock. And I think that's part of the problem, because like, after the day, night after Cody won the title, you really just planted this, or you WWE really made it a point like, okay, Cody versus Rock, that's what you want to see. And one thing that Rock said was like, whether or not you have the title when I'm back, I want to face you.
Yeah.
So now, to me, it kind of takes the focus a little bit off of the title and more so on just Cody and Rock. And to, in one sense, you can argue that like, okay, we just want to, okay, we don't really care much about like the Cody as actual world champion. Let's just fast forward, I don't know, like 6, 7, 8, 9 months, or even a year from now too, so we can get the Rock program going. But on the other hand, I can now see that like, okay, Rock said he's going to go for Cody title or no title. So now it kind of makes every single individual program potentially one where Cody loses, because now you now have an end game for Cody that doesn't need the title. So I guess I can see it in the sense of, okay, every program could theoretically be the one that does Cody in, but it's going to be fine because the title is no longer the thing that we want to see out of Cody long term.
Last thing, I just remember this before we end. WrestleMania is in Las Vegas next year. So that is kind of a cool thing. And they're pushing back the date a few weeks. It'll, I think it's around Easter weekend now.
Yes, it is. Let me see.
18th, 19th, I think I saw.
19th, 20th.
I believe. So, yeah. That the other date that we saw tossed around, which kind of relates to boxing, was the Cinco de Mayo weekend, to push it all the way into May. And as we know, that is Canelo's date. So that would have been an interesting one if they tried to do that. That Saturday show, night one of WrestleMania, had they done it like that, might have been overshadowed a little bit in Las Vegas with whomever Canelo was going to dance with. So they did, you know, they're doing it Easter weekend. I guess it's like Masters and NFL draft and WWE WrestleMania, like kind of all in those couple of weeks. And now I can actually go, because the reason I was not in Philly this year, part of the reason was my wife's birthday is always WrestleMania weekend. So I don't want to do that. I like being married, and previously my ex-wife, same birthday.
Oh, wow.
So, when I was divorced and single, you know, I was able to go, and that's when I did go. But now if they keep it in sort of that mid to late April, I should be able to go to a lot of these events. And I know F4W, Wrestling Observer, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine the convention gets switched to WrestleMania weekend instead of Double or Nothing weekend next year. Or maybe we sort of figure out how to do something around that. And maybe, I don't know, you can't have two events within in a matter of like 6 weeks. So that will be, I would imagine we're just going to do WrestleMania. But anyway, we got to get you out there.
Yeah, I believe me, that's going to be like one of my bucket list things to attend, the F4W convention, because they just keep hearing how great it is. And then, you know, Vegas, first of all, I'm with you on the move date. It actually definitely helps me because there are some WrestleMania years that fall on my birthday.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, you know, like I want to watch WrestleMania, but like, do I really want to make that the focus of my birthday night? And not just that. So my partner and I, our birthdays are 2 days apart. And there are some years where WrestleMania will have it on the first week of April and some mm-hmm. that will have it on the last week of March.
March, yeah.
Now, this time around, I was actually in Philly to watch Mania, not at the Eagles Stadium, but at an Airbnb like just outside of Philly where we just like watch it like almost like a home movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
To watch it with friends. So I'm very happy that like there is no longer a risk of me missing my partner's birthday or me missing going to see friends to watch Mania because it's my partner's birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the right. It's the right choice. So just a little bit of notes for this feed. So originally, well, generally what happens is the wrap with Keela and Salty Scott, I think their plan was to record post Backlash, but I, for whatever reason, they weren't able to do it. I think they're going to record post Monday Night Raw. So the next episode of the wrap will be in the podcast feed on Tuesday morning, which means that observe this, which I just did last week. We streamed it here. Long show, 2.5 hours talking about 1989. WWF and NWA, and we sprinkled in a lot of the current stuff that will be in the feed on Monday morning. And so we'll have this show that you're hearing with Carlos and I for Sunday morning, observe this Monday morning, the wrap on Tuesday morning. So maybe Carlos, we'll have to figure this out, but I think a lot of people are going to be interested in this Tyson and Jake Paul thing. And the Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano is, for people who actually enjoy boxing, that's the fight. but the hype around Tyson and Jake Paul, maybe we should try to come back around that time and do it again. And then we can sort of talk about the things that have, the big stuff that has happened since then. And then that is still coming, because I think that would be a good time to try and do this again.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, you know me, I'm always up to do one of these things. And oh yeah, literally the entire world is gonna be watching that Jake Paul fight. Unfortunately, so will I. But come on,
okay, now we're testing your age here.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna guess you've never seen Mike Tyson fight live.
No, I believe I have, because I believe...
Oh, Roy Jones. You would have seen the Roy Jones thing.
Well, but that doesn't count. That one doesn't count. Okay, that wasn't... I think it's safe to say we can all agree. Maybe we can, you know, delete that out of our collective memory banks. I'm trying to think. May have been the... My parents may have gotten
Lennox Lewis.
May have been the Lennox Lewis fight. I'm pretty sure they did not. I did not see when I was a kid. My parents buy Clifford Etienne.
Yeah.
As an opponent. I think it could have been Lennox Lewis. Because like I'm almost certain my family ordered the two Holyfield fights, but the problem is, I was 1 and 2 years old, respectively, at the time of those fights.
Then he, but he was also at the end there. He was like fighting on Fox. Like there was like a Francois Botha fight, and there was some.
That was after Holyfield. That was like
okay. Yeah. Okay. So I just remember at the end there was like they put him on Fox because Showtime and HBO did not want to do business with him anymore. So there was like a couple, maybe one or two actually Fox Network fights before he retired. So. Alrighty, that is going to be it from here. I want to thank Carlos for jumping on, talking some boxing and pro wrestling. With all these events happening all the time now, we may have more of these kind of shows where we got to split the topics up a little bit.
But oh yeah,
that's why it's awesome to have Carlos on, who can talk both topics. So
yeah, I was more than happy to be on board. I'm glad my friends convinced me to watch Backlash because. No joke, like 20 minutes after they convinced me to do so, you messaged me asking, hey, are you watching this WWE show right now? And I was like, wow, absolutely. Big coincidences there, which more than happy to be on board. I made sure to somehow fit watching both shows. And not just that, also watching the undercard of the fights tonight. So it was a... Man, that Canelo card was, including the undercard, was 6.5 hours long. Ooh. Only six fights, by the way.
There's a lot of just hanging around and listening to people talk.
Not just that, there was Formula One here today because they were in Miami. So
no way.
Yeah, they had the sprint race at noon, and then at 4 p.m. they had the actual qualifiers, and tomorrow, well, actually today. Is the actual race itself. So it is, my original plan was watching Backlash in the morning and then watching the Formula One. But, you know, listen, this crowd and being on here, that was more than enough to get me to watch it live.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Carlos. So for Carlos, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.